Chapter 7. Meet Russell Kelfer. Not I, but Christ. It was 2 years after arriving at Wayside Chapel that God brought Russell and Martha Kelfer into our lives. I had heard much about them and the ministry they had to single students and young adults. In fact, they had weekly meetings in their home where Russell and Martha hosted around 150 the last year or so. The group was drawn together by Russell's teaching and the warm atmosphere of Martha's hospitality. The beginning of our ministry together. The Kelfers visited and started attending Wayside in 1974. We had added on to our original sanctuary space in 1974, doubling the seating capacity to nearly 300. We averaged 100 or so in attendance at the time before its completion. That Easter Sunday of 1974, we had 250 in attendance. I had resigned myself to believe that we would never see that many again. Our EFCA denomination consisted primarily of small churches of 100 or less. By 1976, we were averaging 600 in attendance. Russell began teaching in 1977, and before long had several hundred in his Koinonia class. As a pastor, when you have someone like Russell coming to your church, you need to put him to work in the ministry. He was a unique writer and storyteller. He had some training in journalism from the University of Texas, UT, but was uniquely gifted in a way that few of us will ever be. He was able to bring the principles of Scripture to light through practical application. He had a way of putting words together and structuring his thoughts that kept your attention focused, even though he was reading his lessons from manuscript. In later years, the transcripts were passed out to each member in his class for each person to follow along while he was reading it. Russell also had a gift for poetry. You will notice a number of his poems have been included at the end of quite a few chapters in this book. I recognized that giftedness and what Russell could bring to the ministry that I never could. I was not threatened by him, but I understood that teaming up with him and allowing him the freedom to exercise his gifts would only bless our ministry and make us look better. So for 23 years from 1977 till 2000, we worked side by side, never getting in each other's way, never crossing each other's paths, but rather embracing and enhancing one another. It was amazing how many times, without consulting one another, our messages blended and complemented each other. Both his ministry, Discipleship Tape Ministries, DTM, and my ministry at Wayside were blessed through this long-term relationship. Russell not only had his own taped messages going out around the world, but his ministry was also sending out my taped messages and those of others who occasionally preached from our pulpit. Humor always helps. One of the greatest practical jokes ever pulled on me was done by Russell Kelfer. One day, Russell sent me a tape with the title, A Collection of Steve Troxell's Greatest Jokes. I have been known for my good and bad jokes. People at Wayside were very tolerant and understanding. I was complimented later in my ministry that as I got older, my jokes were getting better. It's great that something improves with age. I thought to myself, this is so nice of my good friend to go back over the years and glean all of my best jokes and put them on a single tape for me and for my posterity. I could hardly wait to get out in my old pickup truck and slip that tape into my tape deck, the good old days of tapes, and be amused by my best jokes. I remember slipping it in and turning it on and increasing the volume. I was driving down the freeway by the front of our church, but there was no sound. I fast-forwarded it a little farther, still no sound. I finally had it fast-forwarded to the end of the tape, and still there was nothing. I thought to myself, it must be on the other side. I turned it over and started listening. Still, there was only silence. Then I realized that he had pulled a really good joke on me. That is one that our people will never forget. He loved to have fun. He could give it out and take it just as well. Making the most with what he had. Russell had some physical limitations. He only had one eye. His other eye and one ear were damaged at birth. And then that same damaged eye was totally destroyed in a compulsory PE class in which he was assigned to handball. He was hit in that eye. Great pain ensued and never lessened. Doctors eventually removed the blind eye. But for some unknown reason, for the rest of his life, he continued to have pain in his good eye. I remember the night when I was rooming with him at the UCLA campus, where three of us had attended a seminar. He took his glass eye out and sat it on the table between our beds as we retired. I felt like the eye of Texas was upon me all night long. He was a loyal UT fan as well. He had only one eye and only one good ear. But he made the most of what he had, and he persevered in ministry through a lifetime of pain. Every pastor should be so fortunate to have a Russell Kelfer ministering side by side with him for many years. In recent years here in San Antonio, we have had two notable basketball players who are numbered among the top 50 all-time greatest players in the NBA. You may recognize their names, David Robinson, now retired, and Tim Duncan, in the midst of a very successful career. As good of an athlete as David Robinson was, he was never able to be successful in bringing home an NBA crown without the help of Tim Duncan. When the opportunity came along to have Tim as their number one draft pick in 1997, David welcomed the opportunity to play alongside Tim. He even allowed Tim to overshadow him in many areas. What David had not been able to do on his own in all the previous years, he was now able to do in 1999 and 2003. Now, Tim Duncan is having equal success, but he is quick to compliment his teammates, without whom he could not win the NBA's most prized trophy. There is a great leadership lesson here. There is no limit to what we can accomplish if we surround ourselves with good people and work as a team. In business, all successful CEOs understand that their success is largely determined by the staff that serves with them. Together, they can reach the top. It is true in all areas of life and ministry. At the leadership level, we look for the three C's, not original with us by any means. I am not even sure where I first heard it. It may well have come from Bill Hybels. The three C's are character, competency, and chemistry. For teams to get along together, they need to have all three. Russell was that kind of a man and teacher. He had character. He was competent in so many ways, but like the Apostle Paul, he was quick to acknowledge his inadequacy and that his sufficiency was of God, 2 Corinthians 3:5. And he also enjoyed good chemistry with the rest of the team. His value as a team player. Here are some reasons I valued Russell as a team player. When we were facing tough decisions, he was one to whom I would go for counsel. I can remember two occasions separated by years when larger, more prestigious churches in other parts of the country approached Connie and me about considering their senior pastorates. Most offers that came our way were easy to decline, but two intrigued me. Maybe it was the timing, the issues that we were dealing with, or the temptation to move on to something bigger and grander. I made my way to Russell. He would pray and then each time returned with the counsel, "Not now. Your ministry is not finished at Wayside." So I stayed the course. We each need someone like that who will give us some honest perspective and help us keep our feet on the ground and our necks in the yoke. Secondly, Russell understood the exchanged life. Where it is not I, but Christ, Galatians 2:20, living and working through me. It is not what we can do for God, but rather what He wants to do through us. I cannot say that I learned the concept through Russell, but it was certainly reinforced in his teaching. This emphasis permeated our church and every decision that we made, including operating with a no-debt policy. We wanted it to be so big and impossible that only God could accomplish it. Russell strongly challenged us in that vein. Thirdly, Russell's life was eternally focused. He led by example. He waited for that city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. Hebrews 11:10. Russell challenged all of us to live for the eternal. His impact in death. God took Russell home quite suddenly in early 2000. He was hospitalized for what most of us thought would be a routine medical procedure on his heart. But God had other plans for Russell while he was on the operating table. On the night of his memorial, the church was filled with people coming from all over the country to pay tribute to this unassuming and unpretentious man who allowed Christ to live his life through him and give him the glory. The following Sunday, I put aside what I was planning to preach and gave a message on the impact of Russell's life. It is not often that a pastor feels led to do this. This was the first and only time in 42 years of ministry that I did this for one of our own. His impact was great indeed. I spoke on a text from 2 Timothy 4. For I am already being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure is at hand. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Finally, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give to me on that day, and not to me only, but also to all who have loved his appearing. 2 Timothy 4:6 through 8. That was a fitting tribute to this humble servant. He was ready. He had fought. He had kept the faith. And he had finished his race. And while he was fighting and running, he kept me in the fight and in the race as well. Thanks, Russell. Your life made a wonderful difference in my life and in the lives of many around the world. The legend is told that many years ago, during the fighting of a battle, a certain captain did great things with his sword. He accounted for scores of the enemy's deaths, and his deeds became known throughout the army and were reported to the king. At the end of the engagement, the king sent for that sword.
"Let me see this sword that has done so much. Bring it to me," he said.
They brought it to his majesty, and he gave it back with an air of disappointment.
"It is an ordinary sword. I see nothing special in it."
He returned it to the captain. They told the captain what the king had said, and he ventured to send back this message. "You should have sent for the arm that wielded it." It's not the sword. It is the arm that wields it. Russell could not have agreed more. Russell was simply the sword. All glory goes to the one who wielded him. Why God Chose Me by Russell Kelfer. My talents, is that what he saw long ago? My talents? I see that the answer is no. My looks? Just a mirror dispels that thought. If that's why he called me for naught. My wisdom? Not even a trace do I see. Then why, tell me why, did my Savior call me? And just like the wind as it glides through the sky, a voice softly answers, "Yes, I'll tell you why. Because when I looked, you were nothing to see. And when I shine through nothing, then men will see me. I call men of weakness so I can be strong. I call even the downcast and give them a song. I call out of nothing, so when something appears, men give me the glory, and down through the years. It has been so, though the world is appalled. Not many noble nor wise have been called. The poor man, the weak man, though often despised, come alive at God's touch, and the world is surprised. The fruitless, the failures, the dregs of the earth become princes and kings when God's Son gives them birth. And in spite of their past or how they were raised, God gives them life, and the world is amazed. Your credentials for heaven? I'll give you a clue. They're only that God has found Jesus in you. In spite of your weakness, your failures, your health. In spite of your lack of applause, praise, or wealth. He called, he equipped, he sent from above, and made you his chosen and bathed you in love. 'Twas only that God, in his infinite power, gave us himself in that marvelous hour, when we said yes to his gift of grace, and Jesus said yes as he took our place. What a trophy we are, what a victory indeed, but not for our value, but rather our need. Then let's yield all we are, all we have, all we own. Relinquish our pride and come down from our throne. And turning to Jesus, let's worship and praise that he will be Lord all the rest of our days. My talents, my wisdom, no, dear God, now I see it was grace and grace only that you should choose me.